Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're gonna tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
All right, James, it is a big show. We have lots to talk about, like a lot. I've got a big, long list. Are you excited?
I'm pumped. Big show.
Big show. All right. So, today we are going to talk about Auston Matthews. We are going to talk a little bit about the Maple Leafs offense. We're going to talk about the forward depth and whether a trade is likely and how difficult that's going to be to pull off. I want to get into the apparent Jack Campbell injury and its repercussions, even though Campbell, did you hear him after the game? He was just like total polite, but did not want to talk about his injury. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, that's not our quote of the week, though.
It's, well, James, don't spoil what I'm doing. God. We're going to talk about a little bit about Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall briefly. And I want to talk about some of the depth questions and concerns right now. And then we're going to get into some listener questions. But the first thing we're doing is a new feature. And I'm naming it, James. It's not quote of the week. It is, you're saying it's my fault, quote of the week. How about that? Remember?
No, I don't. You're saying it's my fault?
Yeah, you don't remember that quote. Great. We're off to a rocking start. I guess I need a new intro or a new name for the quote of the week. Shit. All right. Well, anyway, let's listen to the clip and then we are going to talk about it.
I just had some issues here with my hand that I was going through. So, I couldn't really... I'm not really going to go any further than that, but obviously if I could have skated or if I could have played and felt comfortable, I would have done that, but feels fine now and we're going to move forward here.
Is it something like you'll have to kind of keep your eye on moving forward?
A little bit. I mean, we'll have to obviously take care of it here the next couple of weeks, but feels a lot better. Feel more than good enough to play and good enough to go out there and contribute and help the team and
All right, James, that was, of course, Auston Matthews, and he was talking about the injury that he has, that forced him to leave a practice last week, like a couple minutes, a minute before it started, and then miss the game last Friday night. He returned to play in Calgary, but he did not look like himself. Like, what would, like, your level of concern be if you were Sheldon Keefe, if you were Kyle Dubas, if you were Auston Matthews, like... How concerned do you think they should be with this little issue that he's had?
His hand. He said it was his hand. That it didn't seem like it was his hand. It didn't seem like, just like his demeanor and maybe we're reading too much into the body language and stuff like that, but it seemed like it was like, you know, they were calling it an upper body injury. It, you know, everyone was, has been speculating that it was as a result of the cross checks that he took to the back, and that that might have potentially been the injury. I mean, if it's something with his hand that's going to heal in the next couple of weeks, then maybe the concern level is not that high. So, I don't know. It's hard when you were just kind of speculating with what the injury is for. It's tough for me to go down that road. I mean, if Matthews has to play through an injury for a prolonged period of time, obviously that hurts Leaf significantly, but I don't know if it's not his back, if it's not related to the back problems that he's had in the past, then maybe we're overplaying how big a deal this is.
Well, based on the way that he looked against Calgary, and now you can say, you know, cross-country flight, he hadn't really skated hard in a few days. He just didn't look normal. Like, he didn't have any burst. He looked like, honestly, someone playing with that kind of an injury that you're talking about, with a back injury, with, like, kind of, I don't know, anything like that. He just didn't look normal. Like, he didn't have a shot through the first two periods. He had one attempt through the first two periods. I just didn't think that was encouraging. I'm surprised, honestly, that he played, given that they hadn't skated that morning. They hadn't skated the day before. He didn't practice. I'm just kind of surprised at how quickly he was back in the lineup. But obviously, if he says he's okay, he feels like he's okay. But it's a little worrying, because when he's not right, they're not the same team. Like, their offense is so predicated on that line. And you saw against Calgary, like, they just, that line had nothing.
Yeah, they're much more of a, they kind of have to grind out those games, especially against a pretty good team like Calgary. You know, it hurts you on the power play. Matthews was killing penalties. It's going to hurt you there. You're not going to be able to give him the same kind of minutes that he was playing. I mean, and the thing too is that there's, without question, the first six games of the season, I guess five because he didn't play the sixth game. The first five games of the season, there's no question who the Leafs' best player was. You know, I know that Tavares and Marner had more points, but Matthews was the guy, and he looked primed for a monster season. And if this is the scenario like we had last year, where, you know, both Marner and Tavares had an injury early in the year and then didn't really look right for a long period after that point, if this is one of those situations, it's the Leafs are going to have to grind out some more wins that aren't always going to be pretty.
Well, and so that's kind of what we're going to talk about. I guess we can talk about it now. Offensively, 5-on-5, they haven't looked great. That line has generally looked pretty good. They're just, you know, Sheldon Keefe's talked a lot about pace and wanting to generate chances, better chances, attack the net more, not wait for the defense to get set up. They just haven't felt like overly threatening. Do you think that is a result of those bottom two lines? Do you think that's a result of William Nylander kind of being off to a so-so start? What do you think that is? Do you think it's new players? Do you think it's trying to play a little bit differently in the way that Sheldon Keefe has talked about?
Yeah, I mean, I personally think there's a chemistry issue for sure with a new lineup, but I also think that, you know, with the new assistant coaches and with Sheldon Keefe having that training camp and like really emphasizing that he wants the Leafs to be better defensively, that, you know, the balance that they got to find in trying to change their DNA a little bit and being harder to play against through the neutral zone in the defensive zone while still being really dangerous offensively, I don't think that they found that yet. And it's interesting, you know, you can see it in the numbers. Like if you look at possession, you look at Corsi 4 percentage, the Leafs are one of the best teams in the league. So like territorially, they are spending a lot of time in the offensive zone. But then if you bring, you know, some of these shot quality metrics into the equation, if you look at like scoring chances for and against, they fall down to 10th. And then if you look at expected goals, they fall even further than that. Yeah. It's like the Leafs are getting a lot of zone time, and that, you know, the push to play better defensively is working in that sense, and that you look at how many fewer shots against and shot attempts against. Those are all way down from last year, but they're also having a harder time, as you said, getting to the net and getting high quality opportunities. And, you know, maybe we can talk about this a little bit more, but really the power play has been so good and so effective that it's covered up. You know, if they weren't getting all these power play goals, they would have been losing more of these games. And I think a lot more of the conversation around this team would be what's wrong with the offense.
Well, there was a kind of an interesting situation after that Edmonton game, in which, I guess the first Edmonton game, that's the Wednesday night game, when they lost, and Austin Matthews basically said that maybe they got a little too focused on containing Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid and kind of lost sight of who they were in terms of offense. And there was a moment in that game, James, like where that line, where the Matthews line was in the offensive zone, it must have been like over a minute. And they just had the puck on the perimeter and nothing was really happening. They were controlling the puck, but like nothing was getting at the net. And maybe that's part of the dynamic that's going on, that they're trying to kind of strike this new balance. But I don't think that they've found anything. Like you mentioned the chemistry. I don't think they've found anything yet. I think everything should be on the table. I don't know that there's a line. Like obviously Marner and Matthews have been pretty good. But other than that, it doesn't feel like anything has really clicked just yet. Like, what would you do if you were Sheldon Keefe with some of those combinations, especially with Thornton out?
I still look at it and I keep coming back to maybe they should break up Matthews and Marner. I mean, I know that that's not what the players want, but I just think that it might, you know, diversify their offense a little bit more. And, you know, they had VC on that line. I don't think that worked against Calgary.
It did not. He was gone by the third period. So
maybe maybe you get a Mikheyev up on that line and just like Mikheyev looks great, but he's not generating any offense. So like he looks like he's skating just unbelievable. And I think Hyman's had a really good start to his year. You know, Tavares has been super dangerous on the power play. And Nylander has been kind of all over the place. I mean, he's had like really good games and he's had really kind of quiet games or games where you don't notice him as much. So I think you're right. I mean, I think that they haven't really established what they are yet or what they're going to be. And it seems like they've pulled away a little bit from having that Kerfoot line be like kind of like a tough minute checking line.
Because they can't use it that way anymore.
Yeah, because it's so I you know it's a shame that you know Thornton goes down, but also Nick Robertson goes down, because I think Robertson could have been a really interesting piece to put on a line with Tavares or Matthews and really seen what he could have done offensively, even if you have to shelter the line.
Yep, 100%.
You know, I would like to see some of the other guys they haven't played yet. Like, you know, I know Brooks got into the game, but you know, I'd like to see what Joey Anderson or Travis Boyd or some of these other forwards can do, because I know it's early, but I feel like I've seen enough of Barabanov, and I don't think he's going to bring, you know, necessarily the element that they need right now. You know, when they're struggling to score and they're struggling to generate, I think they need some guys who can skate and who can get to the net and who can grind things a little bit. And you know, I think that trying some of these other options might make some sense.
We're going to get to that in a little bit, but I want to come back to the point you made about Marner and Matthews. I think is interesting. One thing that I've noticed, and we even saw it in the game that Matthews didn't play over the weekend, the connection with Marner and Tavares is kind of gone. And we saw that last year. They started the year together. Obviously, they didn't have Zach Hyman. They got together again in the playoffs. That connection just doesn't feel like it's the same. And
when they're on the ice together, you keep expecting them to find each other and make something happen. And it hasn't happened in a long time, has it?
Yeah, and so it's gone flat. And so then the question is, like, what do you just try to hope over a stretch of games that it comes back? Maybe you get Nylander playing with Matthews. Obviously, I've advocated for trying something else with Matthews and just giving him neither guy, but I don't know that that works given the forwards that they have right now. But this kind of brings me into something I've been wondering about, and Elliot Friedman reported over the weekend that the Leafs were looking at trying to add a forward. To me, even with Joe Thornton, they feel like a forward short to me, but especially when you take out Joe Thornton, they feel like they're a forward short. And that's not great. Like when you take a 41-year-old in his 23rd season out of the lineup and it kind of messes everything up, that kind of shows that you're a little more vulnerable than maybe you want to be. And I guess that ties back, James, to what they did in the offseason when they get rid of Kapanen, they get rid of Janssen to improve their defense. Do you, like, how difficult do you think it would be to make a trade like that in a season like this with the quarantine rules, with the cap? Like, where, what do you see, like, the likelihood of something like that?
What are you trading, though? Like your depth on defense for for something? That's the idea?
That's its own side thing, because then let's say you're trading Travis Dermott. You're not trading Travis Dermott for a guy who's on an expiring contract. You're going to want to get something that you can have a little bit more control of. So that's its own thing. So you can take that wherever you want.
Well, I'm just trying to think of the... Really, what it feels like the Leafs need is another center, right? Or at least a winger that can play center.
I mean,
that one game when they didn't have Thornton, they didn't have Robertson, and they didn't have Matthews, it's like you look at the forward lineup, it's like, boy, this is going to be a real battle for this team. And
well, you tweeted, James, and it's like, it's the point. They took a guy who didn't make their taxi squad and had to put him on their third line. Now, granted, like Pierre Engvall played a lot of games for them last year, but that says something about your depth at center.
Pierre Engvall has played two games. He's played 20 minutes at even strength in those games. And he is at 58% expected goals. Now, probably not the toughest minutes in the world, but I think Engvall's been fine. Like I think that he's a guy that belongs on the roster, but probably just in a depth role. Don't you?
Yeah, I like him on the fourth line. I would rather play him than Parabanov every time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting looking at some of the numbers, you know, the fourth line, like the possession and all that kind of stuff, it's horrible. Like the numbers
have been
terrible.
Destroyed. Yeah.
The fourth line is a mess. So I think that comes back to what I was saying, but they just don't have a lot of confidence in playing that fourth line at all. And they're not getting any results from it. And then that puts a lot of pressure on the other lines, and they're not getting enough from those lines either.
Well, it's a problem, James. Like, at this stage in his career, Wayne Simmonds can't play on a third or shouldn't be playing on a third line. Like, he's ideally suited to playing 10 minutes total, some power play time. But to ask him to play that high in the lineup at this point, like, to me is a stretch. And that's like kind of what the Thornton injury demonstrated. Like, he was the guy to move up, and that's not ideal.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yep. I mean, Simmonds battling in front of the net is fine, but he just hasn't really been able to. He almost needs to be propped up by pretty good line mates, because if you put him with a couple, you know, depth guys, that line just can't seem to generate anything at all.
Well, and it's a problem. Like, in getting back to the offense, William Nylander was fantastic last year, 5-on-5. And like, the one thing we always kept coming back to is, man, he is attacking the net. He is like, he's relentless. He's doing what he kind of showed glimpses of before, but doing consistently. And he just hasn't done that yet. And so suddenly
I was just going to say, Nylander's underlying numbers are very, very good. It's interesting.
Well, it to me, it ties to the way that they've, until recently, used that line. They're playing a lot in the offensive zone. He's not being asked to do that much in terms of playing in his own end, and that's by design. Like, I thought it was even interesting, the game that Matthews was out. Like, I was playing around with what they were going to do with the lineup in my head, and obviously they ended up going with Marner, Tavares, and Hyman, when originally they had planned to go with Nylander, Tavares, and Hyman. And obviously the very apparent reason is they were going to use that line against McDavid, and you would rather have Marner on the wing against that kind of line than Nylander. And that's, I mean, that's as much a compliment to Marner as it is kind of a little where you'd like to see Nylander grow. Like, I just want to see the Nylander of last year. Like, that guy is different from what we've seen so far. He's just not shooting. He's made some unbelievable passes. But he's been kind of hit or miss so far this year. And that's got to be a little disappointing given how good he was last year.
Yeah. I mean, but that said, I mean, how many guys are we pointing to and saying, like, they've been lights out and been amazing? Like, it's, you know, it's been a really mixed bag so far. And I don't know, like, I wonder how much of that is just like a really short training camp. Teams only played 5 games in the last 10 months. The schedule is really compact. You're introducing a lot of new players. Like, there's a lot of that is going into this.
100%.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James, I have Jack Campbell on my list of stuff I want to discuss first, but I want to get back to the depth before we do that, just because it fits into what we were just talking about. You have mentioned like being surprised that they haven't used Travis Boyd yet. They haven't used Joey Anderson. Why do you think that is? Like, I have my own theories. Why do you think it is?
I think that when you bring over these relatively high profile European veterans, you make some level of promise to them that they're going to get an opportunity. And, I mean, I know Lettinen's only played 2 games and Barabanov's only played 4 of the 7 games, but that's kind of, although, I mean, they did have an opportunity. They could have played some of these guys instead of maybe like an Adam Brooks in the one game. And, but I think that there's some reluctance to pull Barabanov out of the lineup entirely, given, you know, he came over early. He didn't play in the KHL this year. He made a real commitment to the Leafs. But so far, I don't know. I'm not really seeing anything out of Barabanov that says that he's an NHL player. So, and it's obviously a limited sample size, and maybe it's going to take him some time to acclimatize. But I feel like we know that Travis Boyd and Joey Anderson are NHL players, you know, given what they did in New Jersey and Washington, and Barabanov. I'm not seeing it so far.
It's kind of a difficult situation for them because they need to project to future free agents. You're going to get a chance. And if all of a sudden, like Barabanov, they punt him after 5 games or 4 games or whatever, and Lettinen doesn't get much opportunity, suddenly like the next group of like free agents that they're going to want to get are going to look at the Leafs and be like,
why would they come?
Why am I going to come? Like, I saw what happened. Like, yeah, like you've, Mikheyev got an opportunity and Zaitsev, but like, look at the, like recently, maybe the roster's too good. Maybe I'm just not going to get to play. So like, they have to weigh that in mind, but they also need to do what's best for the team, right? Like, and that, like Barabanov has given, like, he just doesn't look like an NHL player. And like, how many games before you can actually make that determination, especially like after, like Chris Johnson and I were talking about this, and he pointed this out, like they invested a lot in getting him. So to like give up after 4 games also is a little tough. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do. Like how many games you give it before you're just like, yeah, this isn't working. And he probably goes back to Russia.
It's also really awkward with the way that the taxi squad works. And like the guys that have the one-way contracts, when they go on the taxi squad, they're actually making more money than when they're on the NHL roster. But if you put Lettinen or Barabanov on that taxi squad,
yes,
like the cap situation is really tight. And, you know, Barabanov and Lettinen, when they go down, they're making hardly anything. Like they're making, you know, 70 grand for the season. And like they could have made many, many multiples of that playing over in Europe. So they're trying to work around not only, you know, the roster decisions, but also the cap decisions. And the more that those guys are making AHL money, the more disgruntled they're going to be. And the other thing too, is that like, you can't expect those guys to, if it's taking them some time to figure out the NHL pace and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't wait, right?
No, it's like it's a short season, right? And like you've got other injuries and like the team's looking a little bit lethargic and having a hard time at even strength. Like, I don't know. How much loyalty do you have to show to these guys?
I don't know. And I don't know, like, I mean, I don't like the 7 defenseman look. So like, I don't know. I mean, Sheldon Keefe seemed okay with it. Like, not totally.
He didn't seem to love
over
it.
Moon, yeah, and then they had set. They were playing 7D, obviously, when they lost Joe Thornton, and suddenly they were down to 10 forwards. And like Lettinen, when you have 7D, like Lettinen and Dermott just aren't going to play that much. And I don't think you can make the case that Lettinen is better than Dermott at this point. I just so it's a sticky situation. But I would, to like to your point, like to see Boyd at least. I'm not totally sure that Anderson's like for sure an NHL player, but at camp he looked pretty good. The results in Jersey last year are encouraging. And it looks like if you played those guys, maybe you could get a little more of an identity with that line where it's more energy and like maybe they get you a few goals. You know what I mean?
One guy who I think they should think about sitting is Spezza. Like, I don't think Spezza's been particularly effective, and, you know, he's older. And I mean, I thought the idea with getting him to clear waivers is that you'd have a little bit of flexibility where he could sit once in a while, especially when they're playing, you know, 7 games in 12 days. Like, I don't see, I guess they want to have that his work in the faceoff dot, I guess, is important right now.
Right now, but he's at 65% shorthanded.
Right. Right. And then, like, that's like, they just don't have enough versatility with some of their forwards to take some draws and do some things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. Like, I mean, if you had a fourth line of, let's say, like Engvall, Boyd, and I mean Anderson, like that's like an interesting kind of energy.
They need some guys that can skate and can just kind of get the puck back and get it down to the offensive zone. And because right now you look at the fourth line and like, I know they haven't played that much, but like, you know, their possession's down under 40%, and, you know, expected goals is like under 30%. And like, you're not getting anything from, you know, and so that'll be.
And that was what happened last year, James. Like, that's like when they had Gauthier and like.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Like the fourth line isn't any better than Gauthier, Timoshov, and, you know, whoever else they had there last year. It seems weird to focus on the fourth line, but the problem is if you can't trust that line at all, you got to play your other guys so much. And then you got the back-to-back games and, you know, it's going to take a toll on the big guns as well, too, if they're playing too much.
Well, and you could make the case that those guys have played a little too much, Marner especially. But let's take a step back, James. The Leafs, as we record this, are 5-2. It hasn't looked the best at times, but like, you win games, and like, that's really all that's going to matter. Like, this is a team that needs to have a better regular season, should win the division. They may not. They should.
I think Dom said yesterday that Montreal now is favored to win the division.
Yeah, don't you feel like they played Vancouver a bunch of times, and Vancouver is bad.
The Leafs played Ottawa twice.
True. Yeah. True. Listen, I was if Montreal is better than I thought, I will admit.
They look really good.
So. And they look good. They look.
They've
deep.
Got some of those.
They just look professional. Like, they have a lot of like professional players. You know what I mean?
They got a great coach. I think Claude Julien. Yes. It's almost like he's become underrated just because, you know, he had some weak teams to work with. But I mean, you had Romanov and you had Suzuki taking the next step and Kotkaniemi, and like, if some of their young guys surprise, and if Price and Allen as the backup have good years, you know, I think Montreal can be a top 5-7 team in the NHL. So it's going to put some pressure on the Leafs for sure. And I think you're right. I think we've been a little bit too doom and gloom so far in the podcast. What are we? We're like 20 some minutes in, and we've been mostly talking about negatives. I mean, the positives are the goaltending looks fine. The power play has been very, very good. Defensively, the Leafs look like they've taken kind of a next step, and some of their, like I said, shots against and all those kind of things are down. I like what's happening on the blue line. I like TJ Brody a lot. Justin Hall has played. I know he's on our list to talk about, but he's played very, very well. It's not like there's not positives here. It's just that.
Sure.
There's some things that we got used to the Leafs having as a strength in terms of like how dynamic they were offensively, and that hasn't been there. And I think that's what's been a little bit jarring about watching them so far.
They're just like, I'm not going to call them red flags, James. I'm going to call them yellow flags. Like, they're like little things like, got to keep an eye on that. And one of those things, James, is the goaltending. You mentioned it. Frederik Andersen, obviously, has played better after his rough start. Jack Campbell has played well when he's gotten the opportunity. But obviously he got hurt Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, whatever, in Calgary. So my question to you is, are you ready for Michael Hutchinson?
You don't think Campbell's going to be ready to go?
I mean, anything is possible. He did not look like someone who's going to be ready to be on the ice the next day or the next day. Like, that didn't look good at all. And I wonder if the only reason he did not take himself out is because there were like 50 seconds left in the game, and he knew that that would have been really, really tough on Frederik Andersen.
Yeah, I was thinking much in that sequence. I wonder if, like, you know, when people talk about Campbell, they talk about how a team first guy he is, and like just like incredibly over the top selfless. And like, I wonder if he was maybe should have, you know, like, I don't know, maybe it's a detriment to the team for him to try and take on more than his body could take in that situation.
Well, I just imagine, like, if I was in that position, I'd be thinking, man, there's like a minute left. I should just finish this. I don't want Frederik Andersen to have to go in cold, play 50 seconds, maybe get hurt himself.
Mm-hmm.
But it does, if he isn't able to be around, if he is actually hurt and he did not want to go there after the game, that suddenly makes the goaltending situation a little precarious. And this was... Like, they did what they tried to do what they could in bringing in Aaron Dell, but then suddenly he gets claimed, and now Hutchinson moves from number four to number three, and if Campbell's hurt, then Hutchinson moves from number three to number two, and suddenly you're back in the position that you were last year, and that was very detrimental. So
they need Anderson to step up in that case. I mean, and then
yes.
Play
every game.
I'm trying not to get ahead of the goalie situation, like create a goalie controversy or issue before there is one. And like, I think so far, you know, 5-on-5 save percentage, the Leafs are middle of the pack in the league. I don't know that the goaltending's really cost them any games. I mean, you could argue maybe, you know, one of the, you know, the early opportunities that Anderson had. But I think Anderson's been fine. I think Campbell's looked really good. And, you know, they're going to skate later today, right? So we'll have, you know, by the time people listen to this podcast, they might know if Campbell's in or out. But it certainly highlights the precariousness of the whole thing if one of the goalies goes down.
Well, so the reason I did think it was not a, like, kind of controversy is, like, kind of stupid, but, like, it was something to be monitored when Anderson had that start. Because if he had played poorly that Monday night against the Jets, I do not think he would have started the next game. And it would have been very possible if Jack Campbell played the Wednesday night against, I guess Campbell played, did Campbell play that Wednesday night? No, he played the Friday. Or no, he didn't play at all. Right. Campbell.
He's played two games. Campbell's played two games. He had the one against Ottawa that was, you know, he faced 18 shots or whatever, and then he played really well against Calgary. So that's all he's played so far.
So my point is, had Anderson not played well against the Jets after the two rough games to start, I think it would have been possible that Campbell played against Edmonton, and if he played well, they probably would have gone with him again. And so you can call it a controversy, you can call it whatever you want. But it, to me, it felt that tenuous with Anderson, given what happened last year. But obviously he rebounded, he played better, he looks more confident in goal. And so if Campbell's out, they're going to need more from him, because obviously, I mean, you don't want to play Michael Hutchinson very much, if at all. And the good news for them is they don't have any back-to-backs until, like, middle of February, a doubleheader against Ottawa at home, if I'm reading the schedule right. So that's good.
What's next on your list, Jonas?
Jake Muzzin, Justin Hall. That pair has just, like, continued to basically be what they were last year. Now their role has changed slightly. They're not facing top lines exclusively like they did before. So that's, like, semi-interesting. But, man, like, I know you're working on some stuff about Justin Hall, but do you want to give any early impressions of that pair or him specifically?
On a basic level, like, it seems like every single game, if you look at any of these underlying numbers and, like, the puck possession and expected goals and whatever, like, Justin Hall leads the entire Leafs lineup in expected goals by a pretty substantial amount. And, like, they've been really, really good. And part of that, I think, is Riley and Brody taking on some pretty tough assignments and more minutes and things like that. But there were a lot of questions coming in with them adding Bogosian and Letton and where was Dermott going to play. And I saw, you know, I read a lot of fans were saying, you know, Hall was going to be the one that was vulnerable in the top four. And I haven't seen it so far. I mean, I think it looks like he's taken another step. You know, it looks like he's really kind of solidified himself in that spot. And it was, you and I were talking, I think it was last night, right? We were talking about the expansion draft and who do you protect and what do you do with Dermott and you're going to lose him to Seattle and whatever. And the thing I said to you was, like, well, what about Hall? Like, you don't really want to protect. If Hall's going to play like this, it's only been seven games. Justin Hall plays like this for another 50 games and shows that he can play 20 minutes a night in a shutdown role in your top four, and he only makes $2 million. You don't really want to expose him in the expansion draft either, do you?
No. And so, like, the reason we were talking about it is, like, we got into, like, what a trade of Dermot would look like. And the idea would be, okay, well, you trade Dermot, let's say, for that forward we're talking about. And now suddenly Seattle looks at your expansion list and they're like, okay, who's next? And theoretically, that next guy, unless they did something we don't expect, would be Justin Hall. And so suddenly, like, you take two of your top six away. And if Hall is what you say, like, if he continues to play this well, then suddenly the Leafs have an interesting question as to whether you expose someone like Muzzin, who's older, who's pricier, or do you expose Brody?
Maybe you expose a forward.
Like who?
Well, like maybe you just protect the big four forwards and then you don't sign Hyman until after the expansion draft happens. And then...
I know, but then there, you still... There are 4D. Which 4D?
Yeah, right.
Riley. So you're... It's really interesting. But anyway, one thing I did notice with Hall, like just watching the game last night, there was a moment where he just makes this really simple play defensively to... what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, he shoved the Flame off the puck, took it, moved it, and the Leafs were out. And it reminded me of something Sheldon Keefe talked about with Hall, like Hall's progression, in that he's kind of learned to become, to use his body and to become more physical and to become better defensively. Because obviously, like, this guy coming out, he wasn't drafted, right? No, he was drafted.
He was Chicago. Drafted, but Chicago
but
kind
of... offense
he
was...
Didn't he play 4 years college and then... And then
yeah.
he didn't really get a contract, and he was in the ECHL when the Leafs took him on. So
yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's the defensive improvement from him, evolution, I guess, that seems to be fueling this, where he's kind of made that transition that some guys with his abilities, like some guys who can really skate, can't make, is kind of a long way of what I'm trying to say.
He's a big, tall, strong guy who can really move. So
yes,
I think he's probably the biggest win that Kyle Dubas and the analytics department has had, you know, in the whole, I can't think of, maybe there's something else that I'm not thinking of right now, but like finding a guy like that who you just pull out of basically nowhere. Yeah. Signed by the Maple Leafs in 2016. I mean, he was playing for the Indy Fuel in the ECHL.
Yep.
And you know, I think, yeah, he signed an AHL deal originally.
Yeah.
1 year on an AHL deal, and then he gets an NHL deal and plays with the Marlies and wins a championship. But his progression from, like, Babcock should have been playing him those years. You know, the year where he played 13 games in 2 years. And for him to be where he is now, I mean, it's a testament, you know, to his personality and his perseverance and all that stuff. I mean, he's been one of the real feel-good stories in the organization the last couple of years.
Well, and I was doing Overdrive last week, and we were talking about the Oilers and comparing them to the Leafs. And that's like, as much as like you win the lottery and you get Matthews and like Arizona takes Strome and you get Marner, like those things matter greatly. Like those are the drivers of why the Leafs are in the position that they are. But if you have all these little wins on the side, like you just find Justin Hall, you develop him like aces, like just like the Raptors, you know, Fred VanVleet's undrafted, Pascal Siakam's like a late first round pick. If you can win on the margins and turn those things into really like make them important, like you find Ilya Mikheyev overseas, you bring him over, and now he's an important player. Like you add all those little things up, and you can see why the Leafs are in a better position than Edmonton. And now Edmonton fans might say, well, what are the Leafs won? But like the rosters are just totally different in that way. Like Edmonton just doesn't have a lot of that stuff.
Is Mikheyev ever going to produce any offense again? And he seems like the most snake bitten player on the team right now. He's like flying all over the ice and he looks amazing on the penalty kill. And then,
you know what the one thing with him though is, James, he's a little Kapanen like in that he's kind of got tunnel vision. Like he's not, he's kind of just a one man wrecking crew. Like he's not really finding opportunities for his line mates, but like he can fly.
He had a lot of points last year when he played. So it'll, but then, you know, in the playoffs, he was just really ineffective and wasn't able to generate anything. So it's going to be, I can already see.
Well, that was after a seventh month layoff.
Yeah. I can see the fan base getting a bit restless with Mikheyev, where he looks great, but there's just not a lot of offense there so far.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, time for some listener questions. These were really good. I just took them from our Leaf Report Twitter. So if people aren't following that, check it out. I think it's Leaf Report Pod. Is that the handle, James?
Yeah.
I think so. All right. This is a good question. I actually really like this question. This is from Corey. What would Mitch Marner need to do to win back the fan base? I think it's really interesting. He's obviously off to a hot start this year in terms of points. I don't know if some of those points feel a little bit like empty calories to me. There's been some empty netters. He got a couple points against Calgary, but like they weren't like influential plays. And I didn't think he had a great game, but he's off to a hot start. So what do you think he has to do to kind of, I guess, put the stuff with the contract last year behind him and make people forget about that?
Well, I think if he's like a really dominant player, and you know, it's interesting. I've been like tweeting out, you know, Mitch Marner is leading the NHL in scoring, or he's tied for the lead in scoring, and I've been posting stuff like that. And I don't know if you've seen some of the responses, but you get a lot of really like snarky replies back of people saying like, you know, like talking about the contract or saying that he hasn't been that noticeable and pointing out that he's got empty net goals. And like, it just seems like, he's a player the fan base is really split on and was really kind of soured on given the way that that negotiation went down last year. So I think that probably the answer, Jonas, is that he has a really monster year, including some success in the playoffs for the team. And then I think that, and I think time too, you know, I think that he's clearly a really good player. I think people want to see, you know, a season where he makes a bigger impact than last year and some more team success in the playoffs. And I think that'll heal some of the wounds. But one of the things that's hurt Marner that has nothing to do with Mitch Marner is the fact what's happened with COVID-19 and the pandemic and the way that the cap has been frozen. And like, I think if we were talking about the cap going up $3 or $4 million every year, that contract starts to look better really quickly. And the Leafs aren't quite as tight in trying to improve in other areas on the roster. But that cap crunch has made the Tavares contract look worse. It's made the Marner contract look worse. It's basically made, you know, every big contract that teams signed hoping that the cap was going to go up, it's made them all look worse. And that's not on Marner, but that's something that's part of the criticism is going to stem from that.
Yeah, and honestly, obviously that was not anticipated, but one of the things that I think like his camp misjudged is the impact that something like that would have on like his popularity in the market, the way he was perceived. Like if they had settled for whatever $10 million in the summer, it wouldn't have been so toxic. And Marner, it might not have affected Marner as much, because like one of the things that we saw last year is it really did affect him, the way he suddenly the fan base kind of turned on him. He didn't seem like the kind of happy-go-lucky kid that we had seen those first few years. But I think you're right. I think it's the playoffs. Like if he has a dominant playoff, like the one he had, I guess, in 2018 against Boston, and the Leafs go on a run, I think that stuff will dissipate. Next question. How much longer is Jimmy Vesey going to be in the top six, basically, is the question.
Well, I guess my counter question to that would be, if not him, then who? You know, who should be getting those minutes? You know,
well, I understand that. Mentioned.
What's that?
You mentioned Mikheyev.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's not. You know, he looks like How do you say hands of stone in Russian? Do you know that? Do you have that in front of you? Like,
yeah.
I think with VC, they're just thinking, like, put him on a sheltered line and he's going to, like, bang in some of, like, he's going to be around the net and he could shoot the puck. And that's what we've seen on a couple of the goals that have been basically tap-ins that Nylander's created for him. He hasn't impressed me, but, you know, the Leafs, we knew this going into the season. The Leafs were trying to get some of these bargain bin guys and just, like, trying to, like, play them with good centers and get as much out of them as they can. And that's what you're seeing, you know. And if they had Robertson, if they had Thornton right now, they could think about pushing VC down the lineup. But you got a couple guys hurt. You got Matthews banged up. And I don't know. It's not like they're drowning in options for guys that can put the puck in the net right now.
No, that's true. One thing, though, James, like I don't totally agree with is how they've tried to basically, they've said they want Jimmy VC to be like Zach Hyman. He is not Zach Hyman. Like, he just doesn't play the same way. He's not physical like that. He doesn't work like that. So, I mean, they have him killing penalties. They don't have him on the power play at all, even with some of the injuries. I don't totally get that. Like, they've loaded up now on one unit again with Thornton out. I think I would get Jimmy VC around the net on the power play. Like, I just, and the other thing is, I think the ideal thing that you would do in the top six is just move Alex Kerfoot up and play him on the wing. But then the question is, who is your third line center? And so maybe that's something you do when Joe Thornton gets back. I don't know. Like, Kerfoot with Nylander and Tavares looked great last year, but they just don't really have the option right now unless they do something else.
Yeah, and I can see that. What do you think Tyler Ennis is on waivers today from Edmonton? Like, does that make any sense at all as like a player that could come in and, like, he's a bit VC-like, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, I would rather have him playing on that third line than Simmons. But let me ask you, as a counter, can they afford him? Like,
he's making a million. I mean, I think that, I don't know. I mean, something else would have to give, right? Like, I think that if you bring in Ennis, then that's where Spezza's going to be living on the taxi squad a lot more. And, you know, you can't afford him, but it's going to make it even tougher with the Barabanov and Lettinen and Spezza situations. You know, you're going to have to, there's going to have to be a real cap dance that's going on there. The thing is, it almost would have been better if the player that, this is going to sound weird, the player that got injured made more money than Thornton and Robertson, because their contracts, it really doesn't free up a whole lot of space for them to do much with.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, would you be comfortable with Ennis playing third line minutes in the case of injury? Or do you think he's like strictly a fourth liner?
No, I mean, I think that if you're in a pinch that he has, I mean, he was doing that in Edmonton last year, right? And like, that's what they liked about him. They acquired him and they were really happy kind of with his production level there. And I think that's exactly what he can do. But you know, the thing is that he's small. He can't play center. Yep. He's not physical. Nope. He has some limitations and they kind of pull in the other direction from what Sheldon Keefe wanted to do with the roster. And we haven't really talked about this, but it's been interesting, you know, like, it sounds like Sheldon Keefe was one of the driving forces behind bringing in, you know, like Bogosian and Wayne Simmons, and, you know, that he was very supportive of that.
2.0.
Well, there's a little bit of that. I mean, I think that the coach can have input. We don't know the extent to which, you know, it was Keefe's decision to bring in certain guys or have them play differently. But Keefe's really kind of been the one pushing, we need to play differently. We need to be more competitive and defensive and whatever. And it's going to be interesting to see, like, what if that approach with this group of players produces really mixed results? Then, you know, like, what do you do at that point?
Those are bigger questions. Those are like serious questions.
Leaf Report's where we bring up the big questions.
All right, last question. Unless you have like a good one that you want to get to.
Well, I got a whole bunch here. I mean,
take a spin.
I got 74 responses when I asked for questions.
Yeah.
Here's one. Andrew Katania. He asks, will Spezza get more ice time or a look in the top six? I mean, I think Spezza is strictly a utility player, down the lineup kind of guy. Like, I know he shows some flash and things like that, but I think at 37, he can't play up the lineup. What do you think?
Well, I mean, the fact that they just sprung Engvall into the third line and not Spezza says something. I mean, they remember, like, Spezza was their third line center a bunch last year. And if not at playing center, he was on the wing. So, next question. One more, maybe one or two more, and then we'll wrap.
Bring it on. I'm trying to quickly grab another one here. I thought you were doing the question duty, but that's okay. I can find one. Throw me the one that you got.
I forget who had this question. Sorry. I think it was Hunter. We're seven games in. Why do I come out of every game feeling like Morgan Riley didn't play well?
Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting. I don't know. Like, do you think that's fair to say that he hasn't played well?
No, I think one thing we underestimate, and you kind of brought it up a little bit before, is he is playing with a totally new partner. They're learning each other's tendencies. They're getting a feel for where each other is going to be, where each other likes the puck. They had no preseason. They had basically like a week of training camp. I just think we underestimate that effect. And they're playing hard minutes now. So like against when McDavid is in town last week, they're facing McDavid. Like that's the hardest literal test there is in the NHL. So I just think there is a feeling out process going on right now with him and Brody.
I think that's fair. I've liked Brody so far. I mean, I like the way that he calms things down. But then, you know, you look at the stat sheet at the end of the game and, you know, you like what he did and it's kind of understated. But then, you know, like, and I've been talking about this the whole podcast, but like the underlying numbers, like expected goals with Brody and Riley on the ice were terrible this year. Like they're not generating enough offense with those two guys on the ice. And I'm having a hard time like pinpointing what exactly they need to fix there. Like it's not like they're making like brutal defensive mistakes all the time. It's just like, it's like Riley hasn't been unleashed offensively the way that he was in past years, where he was just looking really dynamic and really making a difference. And maybe that's the safer, better defensive play that Sheldon keeps looking for that is playing a factor there.
Yeah. Well, and obviously they've made it a priority to get that pair out with Auston Matthews, which means like you're playing with Auston Matthews, but you're also facing tougher competition. It's something. It bears watching. Obviously, we'll see how that goes. Do you have one last question?
Yeah, I kind of like this one. This is from Andy. He says, "How much do the Leafs miss having a true antagonist? They feel a little bit tougher than last year, but they seem to lack the feeling of being hated, which seems to show up when they don't draw a lot of power plays and things like that."
Do you want to take that one?
I mean, I think it's a fair point. I mean, they don't. It's kind of like one of those intangible things, right? But like, you know, like they're just, it doesn't really seem like they're into the fight really as much as, and I think that as the rivalries heat up with these other teams, there's going to be more of that. Like there's going to be more of like kind of, you know, there was that Pionk had that sort of cheap shot there at the end of the Winnipeg game, and Tkachuk jumped on Jack Campbell there when he was hurt last night in the game. And do you think you need that element to be able to win, or do you think the Leafs need more of that element to?
I think we're badly underestimating is how difficult or unusual it is to play in buildings without fans. Like there's just no energy in there, and so like, yes, it's their job, but like it's hard. I would imagine it's hard to get up and find the same zest for the game when it's just. I can tell you, like, and you know this too. It feels like you're just playing in this big empty hall. Like it doesn't feel like normal where the fans are screaming and like, you know what I mean? Like there just is no atmosphere in there. So you can imagine why there's just a lack of, I don't know, anything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Isaac says, can you guys quit The Athletic and stop making stupid articles about Corsi? I'd love Twitter, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, it's going to be an interesting week. The Leafs obviously are on the road. They play in Calgary again. Then they've got Edmonton twice. And they got a little break before they face Vancouver three times in a row. That's going to be fun.
Well, I'll get another one for you. Martin wants to know, what's the deal with airline peanuts? Any thoughts on that one?
Is it a corn or is it a nut? Is that that? No, that's... That's Jerry Seinfeld.
I haven't been on an airplane in a while. long time. I don't know. I'm out of the loop on airline peanuts right now.
I think we have run the course on the podcast.
Can I pull us off the rails right at the end?
No, not going to happen. I do want to mention Bobby Ryan was on the Athletic Hockey Show today. He's off to a great start in Detroit. He's on fire. So check that out. If you haven't listened to that show, give it a listen. It's great. They're both really fun listens. And that's it. That's all I got, James. If you aren't a subscriber to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/leafreport and receive a subscription for just $3.99 a month. That's it. James?
We got good stuff coming. So hopefully if you're not signed up and you're listening to us for free, you think about downloading the app and checking us out because, you know, we're more than just a podcast.
More than just a podcast. That should just be the name of our podcast. More than just a podcast.
That might be confusing given that
it is a podcast.
The podcast is only just a podcast.
All right. We will talk next week, James. Good day to you. Everyone stay safe and thank you for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.